But are we giving DNA a little bit too much credit? If you know any identical twins, you'll know that they're not really identical. Our environment affects how we look, our personality, and our health. Plus, there's something called epigenetics.
Epigenetics refers to the inheritance of information in addition to the DNA sequence.
Oliver Rando is professor of biochemistry at the University of Massachusetts Medical School.
The easiest way to think about this is that every cell in your body has the same DNA, you all came from one fertilized egg, but when a liver cell divides, it never makes a skin cell or a kidney cell. So the liver cell is both passing on its DNA, the book of instructions, but also additional information, which is instructions to be liver cells. So state liverness is an epigenetic state.
Okay, so it's the idea that all the instructions are the same in every single cell in your body, but only some of these instructions were meant to be read at any one time. So some of these genes are on and some of them are off.
That's right. It's like a set of bookmarks in the book of your genome.
Okay, and what kind of things can this affect? You mentioned it helps you divide into a person. You're not just one big blob of identical cells, but does it have any other effects on us as people?
Yeah, so epigenetic information, which is often found in the form of marks on your DNA, plays a role, like you said, in distinguishing one cell type from another. It also affects a lot of processes that are relevant to human health, like glucose control, which is what goes awry in diabetes. Epigenetic defects can also be found in cancer and in developmental problems, things like schizophrenia. So epigenetic marks really do play a role in a lot of the processes related to your health.
And what have you been looking at?
Well, so our interest is in whether or not you pass epigenetic information from one generation to the next. In other words, when a liver cell divides, it tells both of the daughter liver cells to be liver. But passing information on to your children as a human is quite different because the information has to make it into sperm and eggs. So what we study is we ask the question of whether or not a father's environment can affect his offspring's health, well-being, or other phenotypes.
Okay, so how did you study this?
Well, so we study two main kinds of environment. We either give male mice different kinds of diets, so we give them low-protein diets or high-fat diets, or another type of system we study is we give male mice nicotine. Then we take the animals under particular conditions, like the low-protein diet, and we mate them to females, and we ask whether or not anything is altered in their children. And it turns out that the answer is yes. In the case of altering a dad's diet, his kids exhibit altered metabolism. So they have alterations in how they deal with sugar and in how they deal with cholesterol. In the case of nicotine, the children exhibit alterations in how well they metabolize toxins. So in both cases, it looks like the environment experienced by a father can affect aspects of the offspring's health.
And do we know how this is actually working, how this environmental factors is changing which genes are switched on and switched off in the baby?
Well, we have some clues, but I would say that that is very much an active area of research right now. We think in the case of the low protein system, our suspicion is that the information in sperm is comprised of small RNAs. But I would say that remains to be proven definitively.
And that's rats. Do we know of any documented examples of these epigenetic changes happening in humans?
Well, there's a fair bit of evidence in humans that links a parent's access to food to changes in metabolic health in the kids. The most famous example is the so-called Dutch hunger winter. This is a famine that occurred in the Netherlands at the end of World War II. And pregnant women who were present during the famine have children who have increased rates of diabetes, obesity, and heart disease. And that has led to the idea that if a child grows up in conditions in the womb where he or she is not getting enough food, this will cause them to hoard calories later in life. And that can be a problem when they return to a world of plenty of food. So that occurs when the fetus experiences a famine. There's some evidence for a male line effect where it is being passed through the sperm, although there's much less evidence for that in humans, I would say.
Will epigenetic information like this, like which genes are switched on and which are switched off, will they show up in a standard genetic test?
No, genetic tests don't look at epigenetic information at all. You have to look at epigenetic information on purpose. It doesn't fall out of just looking at the DNA sequence. The epi in epigenetic sort of means above, so it's sort of above or on top of the genome. So it's when you just look at the genome, you're not looking at that additional layer of information.
And you mentioned earlier that epigenetic changes are loosely associated with some diseases like diabetes or schizophrenia. So could we be missing something important with a genetic test?
In the case of what are called Mendelian diseases, where if you break a single gene, it gives you a disease, such as cystic fibrosis would be a classic example of this. Genetic testing tells you everything you need to know about your likelihood of having cystic fibrosis. There are other diseases called complex diseases that are influenced by many different parts of the genome and also by the way you live. And in those cases, let's say diabetes, we know it's highly heritable. So if two parents have diabetes, their children are very likely to have diabetes. But when you add up all the pieces of DNA that are associated with diabetes, altogether they only explain a small part of that heritability. And so it's very likely, or it's at least plausible, that epigenetic information explains the so-called missing heritability for complex diseases like diabetes.
Is it possible to do an epigenetic test on someone?
It is, although in a lot of cases, one of the most common epigenetic marks is a modification on DNA. So one of the bases of DNA, cytosine, gets marked with a methyl group. So this is called methyl cytosine. Looking at methyl cytosine is fairly straightforward, and it can be done across the entire genome. The only challenge with cytosine methylation is that it's different for different cells in the body. And so while your DNA is basically the same in every cell in the body, cytosine methylation is different from blood to liver to kidney. And so I think the biggest challenge for doing epigenetic testing of people is that you really want to look at the cell type that's relevant to the disease. So while you can do genetic testing using a blood sample, if you're thinking about a disease that doesn't occur because of blood problems, like say schizophrenia, epigenetic testing of brain tissue, of course, is a much more challenging task. So while reading out epigenetic marks is certainly plausible, I think the challenge with epigenetic testing is that although you can measure cytosine methylation or you can measure certain epigenetic marks very well, there's a challenge in getting the correct tissue for a given disease, like brain samples.
Do you think it will be the norm in future when people get their genes screened to get their epigenetics screened as well?
It could be. I suppose it really depends on how much missing heritability it explains in the end, and that's an open question. So I certainly think over the next decade we'll be doing a lot of epigenetic screening just to see how much it contributes to our understanding of disease propensities. And if it helps a lot, then of course people will adopt it. If it doesn't explain so much, then I